This discussion of the Indian Child Welfare Act by Judge Terry Cody is extracted from the CEJR podcast series, 2021 Dependency Legal Update.
We have so many cases this year. Let's jump right in with Judge Cody and the Indian Child Welfare Act.
Thank you, Judge Edwards. First case we're going to discuss today is In Re MW. All of these cases with the Indian Child Welfare Act are very fact-specific, so I'm going to summarize the facts here, but if you really want to take a look at it, you should go read these cases and understand exactly what happened. But in this case, the father and paternal relatives had reported Indian ancestry. They identified three different tribes, the Apache, Navajo, and Cherokee tribes. The juvenile court said that that was sufficient to require a further inquiry. Now, digress a little bit here. Remember, in January of 2019, the law changed in California, basically setting out a three-part process for ICWA. One, the initial inquiry that occurs even before the petition is filed. Then, based upon that initial inquiry, there is potentially a duty for further inquiry if there's reason to believe you have an Indian child. And finally, if the further inquiry results in a reason to know, then a formal ICWA notice is required. I believe all of the cases, in fact, I'm pretty sure all of the cases today are applying the new law that came into effect in January 2019. So back to In Re MW, the juvenile court ordered further inquiry, obviously finding there was a reason to believe this was an Indian child. And the social worker, the agency, conducted their further inquiry. They contacted tribal agents, gave them something called an ICWA family tree, and 12 tribes were contacted. Ultimately, 10 responded and said that MW was not an Indian child. Two did not respond, despite several attempts to reach them by the social worker. And ultimately, the juvenile court found that this was not an Indian child, and therefore ICWA did not apply. The father appealed that decision, and his argument on appeal was that the social worker did not provide the right information to the juvenile court for the juvenile court to make that decision. The social worker didn't provide the tribal agent contact information, didn't give a copy of the ICWA family tree, didn't indicate they told the tribes what the minor's status was. You didn't have return receipts from the two tribes that had not yet responded. Finally, argued that the ICWA declaration that the juvenile court had wasn't signed under penalty of perjury. And the Court of Appeals said none of that is required. 224.2 of the Welfare and Institutions Code, which is the section that lays out the duty of further inquiry, does not require a particular formal type of documentation of that inquiry. It does require the social worker to make efforts and provide the results, but it doesn't require a particular type of documentation of those results. It doesn't require a declaration to be signed under penalty of perjury. And in this case, although I didn't go through all of the details, this agency and the juvenile court did a very good job of documenting exactly what they did to demonstrate that they had satisfied the duty of further inquiry. Moving on to our next case, which is In Re Dominic, another ICWA case. In this case, the mother reported that she may have Indian ancestry. Now, remember, the ICWA 020 forms have changed because of the new law. And I think many of these cases are using the ICWA 020 because the inquiries were done before the new forms came out, the judicial council forms. So you'll hear and see discussion in these cases about Indian ancestry, which actually doesn't exist in the new forms. But in this case, the mother reported she may have Indian ancestry from a tribe in New Mexico. The grandfather reported that maybe the family had Indian ancestry, but they were from New York. The juvenile court directed the agency to look into it. Social worker went out and found all the tribes, all the registered tribes that existed in New Mexico and New York, and sent them ICWA notices. That's how it's identified in the case. 24 of the tribes responded that this was not an Indian child. 6 did not respond, and it had been more than 60 days. The juvenile court found that ICWA did not apply. And mom appealed that decision, and she argued that without seeing the actual ICWA notices, which did not make it into the record, the juvenile court could not have found that there had been proper notice. And the Court of Appeal disagreed and said notice is not required unless there's reason to know. And in this case, all the court has was reason to believe. The mother in this case conceded that there was adequate due diligence and further inquiry. So that wasn't an issue in appeal. But the agency argued, interestingly, on appeal that these facts didn't even give rise to a reason to believe. And the Court of Appeal disagreed and said they do. Even though the mom did not identify a particular tribe, she said New Mexico. And that was specific enough to find that it triggered a reason to believe and therefore the duty of further inquiry. Our next ICWA case, In Re TG. In this case, the mother said that she may have Indian ancestry through Cherokee tribes, and further discussion with the maternal grandmother confirmed that. And the juvenile court, this is an interesting case because the juvenile court made orders. The minute orders said exactly the opposite of what the juvenile court said. And many of the social workers' reports reported incorrectly what had happened. So the record was pretty conflicted. But ultimately, what occurred was the juvenile court said notice was to be given to the BIA, Cherokee tribes, and the Department of Social Services, and made that order both at detention and at jurisdiction. But there never was any notice given to anybody. In fact, there was never any further documentation in the record of any further inquiry of anybody. And even though the agency continued to report in regular status review reports that the court found that ICWA didn't apply, that never actually happened. So it went all the way to a 2-6 hearing, which occurred after the law had changed, and the mother appealed. The Court of Appeals said these facts unquestionably give rise to a reason to believe. And also, interestingly, too, in this case, there was a case I believe we discussed last year that held that information merely suggesting Indian ancestry was insufficient to trigger a reason to believe. I believe that was the Austin J case. And this court said we disagree with that. We think that this information suggesting Indian ancestry is sufficient to trigger reason to believe, which in turn triggers a duty of further inquiry. And our last ICWA case, this is completely different than the prior three. It has nothing to do with notice. And again, the facts are very detailed in the opinion, so I'll do my best to summarize them here. It's In Re NS. In this case, NS was an Indian child. There was no doubt about that. And he had lived, I think it was he had lived in a dependency guardianship with the grandmother since he was 16 months old. Ultimately, by the time he was several years old, the maternal grandmother decided she wanted to adopt him. And the tribe was contacted, and although at first they were in agreement with the tribal customary adoption, they changed their mind. They wanted guardianship. They really did not like parental rights to be terminated. They wanted parents to always have an opportunity to reunify with their child, even beyond the statutory time frame. So the tribe said, we prefer guardianship. When the tribe chose not to support a tribal customary adoption, a TCA, the agency changed its recommendation because they would have supported a TCA if the tribe had, but since the tribe was not, the agency said they preferred adoption because they thought that was the best plan for this child who was very closely bonded with his grandmother, wanted to be adopted. He was okay with visiting with mom, but he did not want anything to change and had done very well in his grandmother's care. The juvenile court agreed with the agency and ordered termination of parole rights and adoption as the permanent plan, and the mother appealed. On appeal, the arguments that were made were several. One was that the tribes are sovereign entities, and therefore their preference for guardianship preempts state law, and the Court of Appeal said no. ICWA and state law are not conflicting in that regard. The case remained in state court, so state law still applied, and the tribe's preference for guardianship did not override state law. A second argument made was that, not an ICWA issue, but related, that minors' counsel was ineffective because minors' counsel didn't show that they had done any investigation into what benefits this child was going to lose if he was adopted. And the Court of Appeal said, well, there's nothing indicating any benefits even existed. And in fact, this child was not even an enrolled member of the tribe. NS was a member, but not enrolled, and didn't gain any benefits as an enrolled member. And there wasn't any indication that he would have if he had become an enrolled member, which he couldn't have under the existing tribal rules of that tribe. It was the San Pascual tribe. Lastly, or at least one of the other arguments that were made, was that the Indian child exceptions to adoption apply. Now, there are two Indian child exceptions to adoption. One where if termination of parental rights would substantially interfere with the child's connection to the tribe. The second was if the tribe had identified some other plan other than adoption. And in this case, the tribe identified guardianship. And the Court of Appeals said neither of those two exceptions on the facts in this case supported a compelling reason why adoption should not be the permanent plan. Remember, exceptions to adoption require that there be a compelling reason to not find that adoption should be the permanent plan. And in this case, where this child had not ever had much of a connection to the tribe, grandma hadn't done much, but neither had the tribe. And grandma had indicated now that she knew, she would do what she needed to do to try to help have this child have a connection to the tribe. And so the Court of Appeals said the facts supported that this child's connection would not be lost or that the grandmother would not interfere with that connection. And lastly, the argument that was made, there is one, well, there's actually two or three, but one in particular here is the 366.26C2B2, mandatory exception to adoption, which says that you cannot terminate parental rights unless the juvenile court finds beyond a reasonable doubt that continued custody of the child by the parent is likely to result in serious emotional or physical damage to the child. This juvenile court did a really good job and laid out everything I'm talking about, plus the finding under this required finding. And the Court of Appeal affirmed, again, on that basis, finding nobody was in agreement, including the tribe right now, that the child should be returned to mom now. Maybe in 6 months, if she stayed sober, she had a very serious drug abuse problem. And so, again, under these facts, the Court of Appeal affirmed adoption is the permanent plan for this Indian child. And so that concludes all of the ICWA cases today, and we'll turn to Judge Schwartz for a couple of other categories of new cases.